The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Blog Talk Radio.
Round up the usual suspects.
All right, they become the usual suspects again. Welcome to this week's Left Ahead podcast. This is Mike Ball of leftahead.com. I also blog at Harumph at harumpher.com. Welcome. So the usual suspects boil down to, allegedly there are four or five people running for president on most ballots, but it's Trump versus Clinton, and we're getting down to some really weird stuff. And I have some free advice for Hillary Rodham Clinton, and it goes back to way back to the early 70s, when a lesson I learned from the greatest salesman I ever met. He sold space. That is advertising in magazines. And at that time, I was working for a trade magazine, Construction Equipment. And I'll tell you about Larry Huckle and his advice that we can pass directly on to Hillary. But you got to think about her appearances, particularly in the first two presidential debates. And she screwed up some stuff. And the interesting thing is it was not the miss speech she had, and she did make some errors, and she didn't do the full disclosure on her emails, and she let those become a big deal, and she should have dismissed them earlier, and that's a whole other matter, and I won't get into that, but I'll talk about the things that she did do when she went on, because it became apparent that she was trying to be cool. You know, she used Michelle Obama's "when they go low, you go high" kind of stuff, and that kind of worked. But she had chances to put these things aside, and she didn't know how to close the deal. And I hate to use those Trump terms, but this is, in fact, the sales side of being a politician. And Trump is better at it, although you got to say he apparently is a terrible businessman. I mean, not only losing lots of money, but if you look at the analysis from Fortune and Forbes, and they say, basically if he'd taken the hundreds of millions of dollars that his father had left him in realty and the actual cash from his real estate empire and just put it into a money market fund, he'd be worth a whole lot more than he is now. So he has a sense of lettuce. He's not good at that. But what he is good at is structuring contracts. If you'll look at what he does with those things, when he went, his companies went belly up at least four times, and depending on how you look at it, a lot more than that, and lost lots of money for the lenders. And that's it. His contracts are structured in such a way that he isn't personally liable for these things, but the lenders are. So it's his contracts who's keeping his ass afloat, which is really kind of astonishing. So I don't know whether you attribute that to his lawyers or himself or as a combination. He goes in and says, I want these deals structured in such a way that I have no risk. I can only benefit from it. Even if it goes sour, I still make money on her. I make money on every dollar that passes through. He is Mr. Value Added in contract. So he's good at that. But, he gave the idea for The Art of the Deal, which he claims erroneously to have written. It was, in fact, ghosted for him. Co-authored, as his co-author says. But he talks about, I can get the greatest deals and this and that. I don't know about that. But I do know that Hillary can't. She doesn't do sales well. And there are a few simple things that she can do, and she's going to have to do, because I think it's increasingly obvious that she's going to be the president. And she's got a couple things coming up. And she needs to cut deals with those in Congress. Because even if the Democrats were get the Holy Grail and have both houses, which is unlikely, but they are probably going to have a slim majority in the Senate, which will help them get judges and so forth. But in terms of the House, they could face the same thing as Obama did. So she's got to cut deals. And she likes to tout her reputation as a senator from New York and getting bipartisan agreement on some bills and got people to come on and co-sponsor or else go in with her for the vote itself. So she has those and says, see, I can do this thing. I'm going to get in there, and I'm a president, and I'm going to get all these things done. And granted that her husband, when he was president, got a whole bunch of stuff passed, and a lot of it was sucky. A lot of it was really bad, and they were bad versions of bills and didn't advance anything like what we would call a progressive cause, and many of them were reactionary. We have the Defense of Marriage Act, which is probably the worst disgrace of all of the 20th century in terms of legislation. And, of course, there's Don't Ask, Don't Tell, which is just gutless beyond belief. But Bill Clinton, William Jefferson Clinton, loved to say, see, I got bipartisan support, so that makes it a good bill, which is about as smart as Donald Trump saying, I'm rich, therefore I'm smart. Both of those are dumb attitudes and don't really understand what's going on there or else pretend that they don't. But it doesn't make any difference. I don't think if Hillary Clinton becomes president or when Hillary Clinton becomes president, I hope to hell she doesn't try to cut those same sort of lame deals that her husband did and just, give away the store just to make a deal. And I think there's a real risk of that. And I think we need to be skeptical about her ability to get people to come on with her if it is, in fact, her coming on with other people just to get something done. So we've got to ask now, what is it that she was doing right and wrong? And in the debates, what's the deal? And what does that have to do with Larry Huckle? Well, I'll tell you all those things. She went on and on with LaGuardia as a lawyer, and she would go on about something, and Trump would bring up something malicious or stupid, and she would make her point, and then she would go on about these are all my supporting views, and this is all the information you need to show you how right I am, how smart I am, how much I know. And quite frankly, the people on the stage, the people in the audience, the moderators, they didn't really care. Well, she ran over her 2 minutes again and again, and she was like, she turned a good progressive talking point into tedium, into boring. And that's where the salesmanship comes in. And then we'll go back to Larry Huckle. And this has a very light link to Donald Trump as well, because this event happened at the Doral Country Clubs, the 9 golf courses at the end. I don't know how many there are now, but there were 9 at the time. And Donald Trump subsequently bought those. He didn't own them at the time. But my magazine, Construction Equipment, had their semi-annual meeting, which they talk about, the sales objections, objectives and the things they've accomplished and things we need to do. And the editorial people were there as well as all the sales types. So I was down there, and I got the worst job and the best job. The best job was as the junior guy. I got to do investigative reporting. I mean, it wasn't a the blockbuster New York Times series things, but there are things that do the bribes in construction, where the federal dollars are coming from and going, that kind of stuff. So I came out of newspapers and I got to do those things, and that was fun, and I got a lot of leeway, and had the power of an influential trade magazine, so that was kind of keen. I like that, but as the junior, I was given the job of fixing the Nationwide Directory of Construction Equipment. It was a very complex book, and it was the huge revenue producer for all the industry. I think there were 5 construction magazines at the time. McGraw-Hill had 2, and anyway, there were a bunch. And we were pushing hard against there, and during the time I was there, the couple years I was there, we leapfrogged other magazines and got up there. But it was the ads in the National Directory of Construction Equipment, my book, that brought in the revenue. So all the salespeople were really nice to me. They wanted me to feature their customers, and they wanted good placements for this or that, and you know, so they were nice. And I, of course, wouldn't do any of that. And my editor-in-chief, John Rayfield, was supported me on that. You know, I heard him tell the publisher, you'll pardon my obscenity here, but I was walking by the office when he told the publisher, leave my fucking editors alone, which is do not try to influence the directory. And so I got the directory in shape, and I was down there. And so I was talking to the salesmen, and they all talked to me because, you know, that was an influential position within this small world. And at one point, Larry and I ended up at the main bar alone at the Doral. Actually, you know, I think most of the other guys were out playing golf. I don't believe in golf as a an avocation or amusement, but anyway, it was just Larry and I were sitting there and we're talking, and I just had to ask him the big question, which was, you don't have the right territory to be the leading salesman, but almost always you are. Every quarter you come in ahead of everybody else, but they have, you know, Moline, they got Caterpillar out there, they got, you know, all the paving companies, and you don't have the big construction equipment manufacturers. You have Texas with the lubricants and, you know, lesser stuff. They don't have anywhere near the ad volume. How is it that you do that? And I don't understand. You don't have the material, but somehow you get the ad volume. And he sat back, and he kind of smirked. Now, we're both Southerners, and we've been talking our families, and, you know, we're kind of friendly. And we got down there, and he just said, I'll tell you. And he leaned forward, and he said, I know one thing they don't. Pause, pause, pause. And he said, when you've made your sale, shut up. And I'd been on a number of sales calls with various guys in this publication and others, and boy, I immediately knew exactly what he meant and how right he was, because that's one of the biggest problems with sales reps. They love to talk. They're like lawyers, and they run off at the mouth, and they love to go on. And so then if somebody signs a big ad contract with them, and the proper response is, thank you very much. We will do good business together. But most salesmen have to go on and telling them how smart they are and what a good deal. And in other words, getting the customer wondering, did I do the right thing? Did I give away the store? They went on. And they don't know when to be quiet. And that was Hillary during the first two debates. When she got in there and she had a chance, when Trump did something really stupid and nasty, and she could have answered briefly to the main point he made, or a moderator asked something that could have been an embarrassing question, she could have done that. Just make your point and go about your business and shut up. But she wouldn't do it. She went on there, and she had to prove how right she was and go on and on and on. And I think that's not going to cut it with the voters. They don't like that, and they're going to think, oh, no, this is a tedious person, particularly after an orator, Barack Obama, coming in there and going to have some windbag come in and, you know, have to prove herself and say, I'm so smart. I'm such a good lawyer. Let me make this argument for you. Let me make it again, just in case you missed anything. And that's the wrong thing to do. It's the wrong thing to do in a debate. It's the wrong thing to do in a stump speech. And I'm sure it's going to be the wrong thing to do if she is president, when she is president, and she has to get bills passed and has to get support before she introduces the bills, or before she brings up a Supreme Court or other judge. And she's going to have to learn how to make her sale and shut up. And I don't know if she's capable of doing that, but she should learn, because she's going to have to know that if she doesn't do that, then she could very easily end up querying the deal. And it's different being a president from being a senator. And she's in a different power position, and she has to acknowledge that And you think about the ones who do that. It was Lyndon Johnson, because he was a toughie, and he was really kind of forced people to do what he wanted to, or he threatened them, like, you know, he was going to hurt them in their states and with their voters, and he had one way of doing it. But others got things done, and by being sales reps. And she's not a good saleswoman, but she can learn that. But I'm hoping that her advisors pay attention. Now, maybe they'll listen to my show, or look at leftahead.com. They can do that, and she can do that. And I hope to devil she does, because if she gets to it and she becomes the president, when she becomes the president, and she needs to sell a bill or a judge or some other appointee that needs to be approved by Congress, by the Senate, then she needs to get in there, be very concise, and tell people what they need to know, so that, you know they have to go out there to their constituents and say, yes, yes, I voted for this bill or this person, and this is why. And she has to give them the concise and logical ROI terms of why that's a good decision, and shut up. So she can learn that, and I hope somebody's going to be telling her that, I'll do my part, and I'll tweet and email some of that stuff and let them know. But she talks too much, and she can make her points without having to go on proving how smart she is and how much she knows about something and how right her argument is. But she needs to be concise and get it done. So there you go. I'll be concise, and thank you very much for listening in. And you can do that too. You can write to Hillary before or after she becomes president and let her know. Make your sale and shut up. So thank you very much. Good to chat with you. Goodbye.
Round up the usual suspects.
The future is a hefty responsibility, and not one that we take lightly. But then, taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.